Welcome to State of the News. I'm Rick Howlett. We are, of course, suspending our Friday News Roundup, as we do once a year here at Churchill Downs, because it's our annual Derby Week handicapping show, live from Churchill Downs. And this hour we set aside for speculating on this year's contenders in the run for the Roses. And, of course, we'll look at today's Kentucky Oaks, which will be run at about 5:45 this evening. We have two experts joining us this hour to offer handicapping advice. Mike Watchmaker is the national handicapper for the Daily Racing Form. He helps to shape handicapping policy and improve the data and past performances. Former handicapper at the Racing Times, Mike also ranks the leaders in each racing division throughout the year and writes regular columns on major events of thoroughbred racing. Mike Watchmaker, welcome back to the show. Good to see you again.
My pleasure.
Ed DeRosa is here from the online racing information service, RizNet.com. Ed does quite a few other things as well. He also blogs for TwinSpires.com, and you may also hear him occasionally on our newscasts. We turn to him fairly often for some perspective on racing industry news. Ed, welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
Before we get into the Derby and Oaks, let's just talk about the health of the racing industry at this point. That, of course, has been struggling. Mike, here at Churchill Downs, they've been pushing for casino gambling to be legalized by the state here in order to increase the purses and generate more revenue. What is the general health of the racing industry as we speak today?
Well, every year you seem to ask me that question. Every year I say, well, you know, they're still betting around $10 billion on it a year, and it's got to be in good shape. But I have to admit I'm a little bit concerned now. You know, the game is definitely contracting, and that in itself might be a good thing. I think there are too many racing dates and not enough horses to fill these racing dates. But the other thing is that I think people are suddenly realizing, well, have come to realize that casino revenues are not necessarily the cure-all for what ails this game. And the perfect illustration is what's going on where I'm based in New York. The Aqueduct Casino has only been up and running since late last year, and we're not even a half a year into it. It seems like the state wants to do over and they want more money, and maybe the racing industry isn't going to get as much of a cut as that they were promised to get. And a lot of the changes that might be taking place in the administration at NYRA might be political motivation going on behind that as well. So we're on shaky ground. I mean, it's a reflection of the economy in general. But, you know, people here in Kentucky, I mean, you know, they desperately want, you know, casino gambling here to aid the racing industry, but it might not be the Band-Aid everyone thinks it is.
Ed, what's your take on how things are looking?
Yeah, I can't disagree with a lot of that. The one thing I will say on the optimistic side of racing is there is still a tremendous zest for the big events and for high-quality horse racing. We'll see that this weekend with the Oaks Derby. Mike mentioned where he's from, New York. I live in Lexington, and Keeneland set attendance records this meet. So when you put out a good product and a product that's not available 9 or 10 months or all year, people do respond and they want to be a part of it. But Mike's absolutely right when he says that the industry is contracting. Some would say it's for worse, but there are definitely some positives to that, and those include people enjoying events like this more.
You're listening to a special edition of State of the News on WFPL. We're talking about racing live from Churchill Downs here on Oaks Day with Mike Watchmaker from the Daily Racing Forum and Ed DeRosa from BrizNet.com. We welcome your input. We won't be taking any calls this hour, but you can email us at news@WFPL.org. You can send us a tweet at WFPL News, or you can reach us through our Facebook page, and our producer, Laura Ellis, will relay your messages or your questions or comments to us. But let's talk about the Kentucky Derby, guys. A full field of 20 again this year, Mike. Is that too many?
I think 20 is too many. It's not going to change, but I do think it is too many. And the reason for that is that in many instances, you don't get a true result. You know, you have horses that get bad trips in the Derby because there are so many horses in it, and you don't always get a true conclusive result. And this is America's most popular horse race. I wouldn't say it's the most important, but it's certainly the most popular horse race in America, and you want a true result in these kind of things. But yeah, 20's too many. I think it would be better, you know, if you reduced it by 4 and brought it down to 16, it would just exponentially remove a lot of the bad racing luck that transpires in races like this. The other thing, it'll prevent the one hole from being the death draw that it is. I mean, you know, you just remember back a couple of years ago when looking at Lucky drew the one hole, the race was over for him at that point. You know, the way they have to position the gate, you know, you have to come out of the one hole because the rail's jutting out at you. And, you know, just by getting away from that would improve this race.
What do you think, Ed? Should the field be shortened?
You know, it's one of those, I definitely would never say they should add horses to the field. So in that sense, it would be hard to argue that you do too poorly going in reverse. But Mike's absolutely right about the rail. It's actually inside the inside rail. So it's definitely a post no one wants, to the point I would even call it a handicap. The 20 isn't ideal, but you can win from out there. We saw it. And in fact, you're more likely to be out of trouble from the 20 than the 1. You might be wide and have to race more ground, but it's not nearly as prohibitive as the 1 is. For that reason, if they went down to 18, I wouldn't lose sleep over it. The more horses out of the race, the lower the betting is what they say, and is Bristnet.com's owned by Churchill, so I certainly want as much betting on the race as possible. But I could definitely understand going to 18, if for no other reason than to eliminate the issue with the one hole.
I don't buy that for a second, that if they reduce the field to 18 or 16, that there would be a significantly, the handle would drop significantly in the Derby. That's nonsense. I mean, people who are going to bet on Done Talking in this race, if Done Talking wasn't in this race because he was number 19 and the field was reduced to 18, those people would find somebody else to lose their money on. I mean, I don't believe that.
I agree with that, but you go from 20 to 18 and there's 380 exact combinations, and then you're down to, I think, 306 or somewhere around there, which is, you know, more than 20. You're reducing the number of combinations by 20%. I definitely think that affects handle. But I do agree that people who were going to bet Done Talking will find someone else to bet, no doubt about that. And the win pool wouldn't suffer. I definitely think you'd see a cutback in the exotic wagering.
Just to echo your point about the rail, I was at the post position draw this week, and there were two spots left, 14 and 1. And when Daddy Longlegs, I guess, got the one spot, there was a huge sigh of relief went up from the Hansen folks who got number 14 because we're not on the rail.
And especially a horse like Hansen who has tactical speed or just plain speed, the one would have been it.
So what other pitfalls, just as a handicapper, what other special pitfalls are there for you as you try to make a good wager on the Derby?
One thing I look for with this race is you can't miss a beat in training. About 10 years ago, Empire Maker would have been favored, he was favored in this race. He actually missed training the week of the race. He ended up running a very well to be second. Funny Side beat him that day. Empire Maker turned the tables in the Belmont. Did the missed training the week of make the difference? You can't say for absolute sure, but I do think it can make a difference. So that's something I look for in the reports leading up to the race. Mike's colleague, Mike Welsh, does a fantastic job watching the horses every morning for 2 weeks at DRF. And that's something I definitely rely on just to make sure, you know, the horses are out there every morning and getting the training they need for a mile and a quarter race the first Saturday in May.
Well, for years I've tried to grasp what it is that makes handicapping the Derby so difficult, and as someone who's a sort of public handicapper, I always hate the fact that if you don't pick the Derby winner, you're a bum the rest of the year, even though you'll have to handicap thousands of races personally and actually make public selections in hundreds of races. If you don't pick the Derby winner, you're a stiff, and I don't like that part of it. But it was interesting. For years I've tried to grasp and put into words why it's so tough to handicap the Derby, and Daily Racing Form's fearless leader, Steve Chris, kind of struck on the right words when he wrote something earlier this week. And the problem is in years past, you used to have these horses race against each other much more frequently. There were fewer prep races. There was a definite finite course to get to the Kentucky Derby. And so these horses raced against each other much more frequently than they do now. And so you had an established pecking order coming into the race. And you had a pretty good idea of what these horses were capable of doing. But now it's the last, I think it's five Kentucky Derby winners only had two prep races as a three-year-old. They're racing much more infrequently. There are so many preps around that they never have to race against each other until they actually meet up at Churchill Downs. And there's a lot of guesswork involved. Not only how is this horse coming into this race? Is he prepared enough? Is he ready for a breakthrough? But also how he stacks up against other horses that he hasn't raced against yet.
You know, talking about being a bum the rest of the year. I've been a bum since, I guess, 2000, because the last one I picked was Fusaichi Pegasus. I think won the 2000 Derby. Before that, it was Lily T. So I've had more bum years than unbum years. What about the big crowd? I mean, 150,000 people will be out here on Derby Day. Do most horses adjust to that well?
One of those I can't say for sure, and I'm a handicapper that relies more on what I've seen in previous races to judge what's going to happen in the upcoming race. There are certainly people who do specialize in horse behavior on the track and how they look and how their flesh is holding up. I'm not one of them, so I couldn't speak technically to what to look for to see if a horse is handling the crowd. But it seems like the one thing you do hear from jockeys that might affect horses more than the crowd when they're warming up or things like that, because by the time they're getting ready to go in the gate, they've been on the far turn for a few minutes away from the noise. But A, when the gates open, and B, when they turn for home, you hear jockeys talk about the wall of noise from the grandstand, just all directed at them, and that's unlike any other race possibly in the world, certainly in the country. So not only are you talking about it affecting the horses, but the jockeys have to contend with it as well. So I definitely think it's a variable. I just don't know how much to consider it.
It's an individual thing, I think, per horse. I mean, you mentioned Fusaichi Pegasus, your last Derby winner. He was a very high-strung horse, and I think that anybody involved would have said that Fusaichi Pegasus is going to freak out at Churchill Downs. Well, he didn't really, and he won the Derby. So, I mean, it's very, very hard to predict. And you know, horses are funny. Even the most seemingly stable racehorse, the littlest thing can set that horse off. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a big crowd, or it could just be something, a flash of light, the pop of a flashbulb, something like that can set horses off. It's odd. And I think the best way to handle it is to ignore it.
Yeah. I remember when they did that during the post-parade, Fusaichi Pegasus kind of reared up a little bit, and I thought, oh, no, he's going to freak out, and then he ran a beautiful race.
Mike brings up a good point. These horses, for those who are aware of how they train, I mean, it's so routine every day, the same thing over and over again, and they're set up for that routine going into race day as well, so Mike brings up a good point. It may seem insignificant to us, but yeah, they absolutely can be set off, so to speak. It's a reason umbrellas typically aren't allowed in the racetrack. Flash photography is frowned upon, if not prohibited. And then on Derby Day, you just have all those other elements, so it's in play. It's just hard to know how much it matters.
How much importance do you attach to the morning workouts here at the track during Derby week?
Well, it's always been my position that I think too much emphasis is placed on the Derby workouts, especially the last couple of weeks leading up to the Derby. And I know why it happens. I mean, you know, you've got a slew of media here, and unless a horse gets injured or is withdrawn from the race or there's a big jockey story or something like that, on a day-to-day basis, there's very little news other than what these horses do in the morning in their workouts. So I actually think the emphasis on this gets blown way out of proportion. I mean, certainly you want a horse that trains well over the racetrack, but that said, you know, it may not be true this year, and it might not necessarily have been true last year. In many instances, I mean, there's been a longstanding tradition here. The racetrack that these horses train over, the 2 weeks before the Derby, the week before the Derby, completely changes come Oaks Day. I mean, you know, Churchill has a long reputation of really tightening the screws on this main track on Oaks Day so that it's as fast as it could possibly be come Derby Day. It's a completely different surface at that point than what these horses have been training over. So while it's always good that a horse, you know, looks like he's handling the racetrack, and it's always a nice indication that it seems like the horse is handling his surroundings and is comfortable in those surroundings. You know, I think there's too much emphasis placed on it, because what else are you going to write about on a day-to-day basis?
What do you think, Ed DeRosa?
Yeah, I think if I'm remembering correctly, Allen Iverson said it best. We're talking about practice, and it's a far cry from what we'll see actually on the track. For me, I mentioned routine with the horses. I'm the same way when I handicap. 51 weeks out of the year, I don't know how a horse worked. I didn't see the work. I'm still betting on him. I'm still handicapping races, having no idea what the horse looked like in the weeks leading up to that race. So for me, to put all this stock into what's happening on the track before the Derby would go against how I handicap races anyway. And I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm just going to handicap the way I do. I may be more familiar with the horses because they run in bigger races and I see them. But in terms of the morning workouts, it's not something I look at week to week. So I'm not going to change going into the Derby. That said, if there is just, and Mike Welsh, I mentioned before, you know, you have the guys you trust. If there is some extreme where they say this horse looks completely different from what I've seen all winter, Mike's based in Florida, some guys are in Kentucky, others in California. If it's someone you trust and they say, look, this is not how the horses looked all spring or all winter, or they look great, they're turning a corner, then maybe you move them up or down based on the information a little bit. But certainly the nuts and bolts of the morning routine, not a big factor for me.
Ed makes excellent points here, and that's another point that I'd like to make about these Derby workouts. You know, you've got people who never watch Derby workouts, unlike Ed, who never watch workouts. Unlike Ed, they'll start pontificating about how well or how poorly a certain horse worked with no position of context. I mean, there are many times horses work great on a regular basis. So if a horse works great again a week before the Kentucky Derby, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Mm-hmm. Conversely, there may be a horse who's a lazy workhorse and doesn't work particularly inspiringly a week before the Derby. And there are people that write, this horse worked poorly before. It's actually what the horse has generally been doing. I mean, what you want to know is if a horse who's been a poor workhorse suddenly has a tremendous work or vice versa.
We're talking the Kentucky Derby wagering, handicapping, and here on Oaks Day here at Churchill Downs. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the specific Kentucky Derby horses right after this break. This is State of the News on WFPL. Welcome back to State of the News. I'm Rick Howlett. We are live at Churchill Downs here on this Kentucky Oaks Day. A pretty nice Kentucky day it's shaping up to be. Of course, with any big event here in Louisville, there's a slight chance of a thunderstorm, but the sun is shining. There is some cloud cover. Nice breeze up here in the press area at Churchill Downs. The track and a lot of the patrons festooned in pink because Churchill Downs is partnering with the group Stand Up to Cancer to raise awareness and money for women's cancers and how they affect women and their families. And the winter circle and the garden area down by the tote board, all festooned in pink here for Kentucky Oaks Day, the race for the fillies. The 15 fillies entered in today's race, which will go off later today. Right now we're going to talk about Kentucky Derby entries. They have a field of 20, full field of 20 for tomorrow's run for the roses. We're talking with Mike Watchmaker of the Daily Racing Forum and Ed DeRosa of Brisnet.com. And let's just start with the early favorite, Bodemeister, installed as the early morning line favorite at 4-1. What do you think, Mike?
Well, you know, everybody knows the big story about Bodemeister. He's attempting to become the first horse in 130 years to win the Kentucky Derby without having races as a two-year-old. And the funny thing is I think he will be the favorite, and he might be clearly the best horse in this race. This is a horse who's earned three straight triple-digit buyer speed figures. Only three other horses in this race have ever earned a triple-digit buyer speed figure, and they each only did it once. So he just might be faster, better than these horses. But that doesn't mean he has to win. I mean, the pace scenario figures to be honest, if not hot. And that could compromise Bodemeister, although I believe he's not necessarily a horse that needs the lead to win. My concern is the quick three-week turnaround. Well, quick for him anyway. Three-week turnaround between his big win and the Arkansas Derby last time out in this race. And I wonder if he's going to be able to produce a top performance off that turnaround. And if I have a question like that, then why would I want him at a relatively short price?
Ed DeRosa, your thoughts on Bodemeister?
Yeah, I actually agree with Mike, especially on that last point. There's just too many questions with the quick turnaround and how he's accomplished his wins to date than to take a short price in this race and expect him to run the race he ran in the Arkansas Derby. Having said that, if he does replicate that, it's pretty tough to see another horse being able to compete. But at 4-1, 9-2, I'm certainly willing to take a shot that he's not going to fire his best race on Saturday.
Michael Matz is back this year. Of course, he trained Barbaro back in the 2006 Derby winner, who unfortunately had to be put down following an injury in the Preakness Stakes. Union Rags, the second favorite at 9-2. What do you think, Mike?
Well, Union Rags is kind of a funny horse. He's a horse that at times looks like he could be very, very special. And at other times, he's turned in what I consider to be disappointing performances. I was disappointed with his narrow loss in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile here last fall. He entered the stretch with Dead Aim on Hanson and just could not go by him. And if he was the horse that I thought he was, I thought he should have won that race. And I was disappointed with his race in the Florida Derby. Now, I know he had a tough trip in the Florida Derby. The setup was all wrong for him. He got a tentative ride in the Florida Derby. And the Florida Derby, after all, was only a prep to get him ready for this race. But that said, I don't think, the Florida Derby was a particularly strong performance for him. And he's going to have to raise his game in order to win this race. And he's shown on several occasions he's got, he may have the potential to significantly raise his game, but he hasn't done it yet. And that's a concern to me.
What do you think of Union Rags, Ed?
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I disagreed with Mike on Bodie Meister is I actually think Union Rags will end up being the favorite, but it'll be close between the two. And I definitely have the same concern about improvement from 2 to 3. And let's face it, he had every chance to run past Hanson in the Breeders' Cup, and he didn't do it. I'm not sure what's changed this year to indicate that he'll be able to do that in the Derby. So to me, I have to be against him at the short price.
As we speak, some horses are running across the finish line down below us. I'm not sure which race this is, race 6. And it's the crowd noise you hear behind us. Now everybody's heading back in to either cash a ticket or to tear it into shreds and throw it away.
In my case, it's tearing.
All right. The number 3 pick, guys, gemologist Todd Pletcher trained a horse at 6-1.
Well, it's hard to really take issue with gemologist. I mean, he is, after all, undefeated in his career. He's won 2 races over this racetrack. He did so last fall. He ran well. His best race yet was his victory in the Wood Memorial last time out. It's really difficult to take strong issue with him. The Wood Memorial he won, I thought, was not the strongest Derby prep race run this year. And I thought there were stronger ones than that. I would not be surprised if Gemologist won this race. No. Am I picking him or do I particularly like him? No. It's that kind of Derby. I mean, I honestly think there are 7 or 8 horses that could legitimately win this race, and he's one of them. And the interesting thing is, in most years, when I would say that or anybody else would say that, you'd say, well, this parity is indicative of mediocrity. That this year is an exception. I think that this is actually a good group. There are so many decent, promising, good horses in this race, and that's what distinguishes this Derby. But bottom line, a gemologist, yes, he can win. No, I don't like him.
What do you think, Ed?
It's probably not good radio that Mike and I are agreeing so much. But
that's okay. We'll find something to
disagree. Yeah, we'll get
sure.
There. But yeah, gemologist to me, one again, can win, but just one I have to be against. The thing I go back with him, yes, he's undefeated. I didn't particularly like his races as a 2-year-old last year, so I'm not that impressed with them. And then this year, he came back in an allowance race. His 3-year-old debut wasn't even in a stake, and he beat a horse, Currency Swap, who is nowhere in his stakes debut as a 3-year-old. And then the Wood Memorial, he beat Alpha, who I haven't been high on all year anyway. So I'm willing to take a stand from a class standpoint and say, yes, gemologist never lost, but I don't think he's beaten great horses either.
And then there's Hanson, who I'm leaning toward for 2 simple reasons. One, he's has pretty color, and number 2, his owner is about half crazy. Dr. Kendall Hanson from Northern Kentucky. But a good horse.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's actually my pick to win the Kentucky Derby. Wow. I wasn't too high on him a few weeks ago, and the loss in the Bluegrass was disappointing. But when Treniberg entered the race, I actually thought that improved Hanson's chances. The best race he's run this year, which he won, the Gotham, he was able to track a pace setter going into the first turn. And if he's able to do that here, and the 14 draw certainly helps, then I think he could take control on the backstretch. If he hits 6 furlongs in 111, he only needs to come home in 50 and change. That'd be 201 and change for 1.25 miles. I think that's good enough to win the race. And I think he has control of the race going into the far turn. So he's my pick.
What do you think, Mike?
I think Hanson is a dangerous horse. I think much depends on what you make of his Bluegrass. If the Bluegrass was a stone-cold prep for this race, then Hanson's got a very good chance to win this race. He set a very fast pace in the Bluegrass. It was a race on a synthetic racing surface. I personally like horses who've shown that they can run and win on dirt when they prep on a synthetic racing surface. I think the move from synthetic to dirt is a very positive one for Hansen. On the other hand, if you look more critically at his race in the Bluegrass, it was Hansen's first attempt at as far as a mile and an eighth. The furthest he had gone before that was a mile and a 16th. And he didn't stay the mile and an eighth. Doolahan did run by him fairly easily in the late stages of that race. And I do think that the distance could be an issue for Hansen. I was also surprised, given the way, as Ed mentioned, that Hansen rated. He rated in the Gotham, and he rated beautifully early in the Gotham, that they didn't go ahead and try and reinforce that running style with him in the Bluegrass. It was a surprise to me that they sent him to the lead and allowed him to set a strong early pace. Because I thought that this newfound style that he used in the Gotham would serve him well in the Kentucky Derby. And then, lo and behold, Treenyburg enters the race, and now he's going to have to rate in the early stages. But they didn't reinforce that style in the Bluegrass, and it's a little bit of a concern to me. But if Treenyburg can carry Hansen for maybe up to a mile, then Hansen's going to inherit the lead at the top of the stretch and maybe have a 2 or 3 length lead at the top of the stretch. I just think the distance is going to be a big issue for him.
We had two early odds of 12-1, Creative Cause, and the other one is I'll Have Another. What do you think of those two?
Well, they were separated by a nose in the San Anita Derby last time out. I'll Have Another won by a nose over Creative Cause. I'll Have Another. Outside posts really don't bother me all that much, but I do think the 19 post hurts this horse in this race. It's good. I'll Have Another horse that likes to lay close, fairly close early, but he doesn't have to lead to win. And it's good that the speed is towards his inside, but still, he's locked into a wide trip if he does rate like he's supposed to. Plus the fact he's had a very light schedule. His race in the Santa Anita Derby was his first race in 2 months and only his second race in 7 months, and it was a draining effort, and I think he might regress off that. As for Creative Cause, he's never run a bad race. He was third, a very good third, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile over this racetrack last fall. He ran well again in the Santa Anita Derby, just not good enough to win it. And he did beat Bodemeister 2 starts back in the San Felipe, but they took the blinkers off him in the Santa Anita Derby. And I thought he hung in between horses in the late stages. And he's not going to race with the blinkers this time either. And I fear he's going to hang.
What do you think, Ed?
I thought for most of the winter and spring that the West Coast horses were best as a group top to bottom. And I was thinking I'd be fairly bullish on I'll Have Another going into this race. But then when Treenyburg drew in, and I just liked what I'd seen from Hansen in the Bluegrass, even though he didn't win, I ended up going with him on top. But I'll Have Another is a horse I'm expecting to run a big race, in part because I do like the West Coast horses so much. I talked about class with gemologists and asking who he's beaten. Well, I like that I'll Have Another beat Creative Cause, who beat Bodemeister. Another Baffert horse, Secret Circle, who's not in the Derby, but he shipped east and won at Oaklawn as well. So the West Coast horses have shown that they can go elsewhere and defeat other horses, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that from either I'll Have Another or Creative Cause on Saturday.
You're listening to a special edition of State of the News on WFPL. We're talking Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks handicapping here on Kentucky Oaks Day at Churchill Downs. Back to the Derby horses. Calvin Burrell looking for his fourth Derby win in what it would be 6 years if he won this year, right? Aboard Take Charge Indy.
Yeah, this is a horse, he won the Florida Derby, and he's going to be anywhere from 2 to 4 times the price, depending on how much they bet Union Rags and how much they don't bet Burrell, than the horse he's already beaten. And I really can't find much fault with him. I thought the allowance race in which he was second to another starter in here, El Padrino, was really solid on somewhat of an off track. And then he just totally took control of the Florida Derby, and he only won by a length, but it was a pretty comfortable length. It was pretty clear the length of the stretch he was going to be the winner. And the breeding, AP Indy, he's a horse who won the Belmont Stakes, which is a mile and a half. His mother won grade one races going a mile and an eighth. So there's certainly no problem with the breeding there to go a mile and a quarter. And Calvin Burrell in the three hole, a lot of people are going to be saying Bo Rail, I think. This is a horse I expect to run big. He's not on my top list of contenders, but I certainly like him a lot more than, say, Bodemeister or Gemologist, especially at the price.
I'm not crazy about Take Charge Indy. I mean, if he won, it wouldn't be the first time I was wrong about a horse. But What got him here was his victory in the Florida Derby. And, you know, the Florida Derby, he got away with a very easy early lead in that race. And there are a lot of people that say that Gulfstream was speed favoring the day of the Florida Derby. The main track there was speed favoring. I don't agree with that part of it. I thought the track was fairly honest that day. But what is a big concern to me is that Take Charge Indy set some very moderate fractions in that race. And he's not going to get as easy a trip. He's not going to get anywhere near as easy a trip as he got in the Florida Derby. Now, this is a horse that has run reasonably well from off the pace in his previous races, but they weren't nearly of the quality of his Florida Derby win. I just don't see how he can win it without, you know, getting a nice, easy pace trip. It's just not going to happen for him. A
couple of other horses at 15-1 along with Take Charge Indy. Again, these are the morning lines set the other night by Mike Battaglia. Daddy Knows Best and Alpha, Ed, what do you think of those two?
Alpha I've somewhat addressed in talking about not liking Gemologist, and Alpha's the type of horse, if I don't like Gemologist, even though Alpha's a bigger price, he's still going to be tough to take for me. He's one of those two that falls in the category of a horse who's missed some training, which I don't like going into the Derby. I don't know the particulars, but I just don't like that, you know, they were postponing workouts. And even before the Wood Memorial, they were sort of playing musical chairs with which races they wanted to go to. Doesn't seem there was a lot of direction to get him totally right for this race, but rather just get him to this race. And I don't like that. So he's a horse I'm against. Daddy Knows Best, I would say, falls into the wise guy category, which is a popular term you'll hear around Derby week. Just sort of the horse that people are trying to get clever with, and I often feel like they try to get too clever. He's a horse that'll be running late. Garrett Gomez in the iron certainly doesn't discourage me, but I'm just not sure he's good enough to beat these. He won a race in Northern California, and then he won a race in New Mexico, which, granted, Mind That Bird went that same route, so I shouldn't disparage it too much, but there's just a little too much steam on him for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with Ed in that Daddy Knows Best seems to be the real wise guy horse here. And there's a lot of buzz around him right now, and it's because he's been working so well here for that race. I mean, we talked about it earlier in the show. You know, I mean, he's the horse that's been the big workout horse. Mike Welch, as a matter of fact, wound up picking him. You know, to me, if you look at Daddy Snow's best past performances, he's not good enough to win this race. I mean, I know he got a 100 buyer speed figure when he won the Sunderland Derby, but the horse he beat in that race, Isn't He Clever? I liked Isn't He Clever in that race, and he moved way too soon, and that enabled Daddy Snow's best to get up. And then Isn't He Clever came back and threw in a complete dud in the Arkansas Derby. And I just don't think he's been competing against anywhere near the kind of talent he's running against in this race. As for Alpha, immediately after the Wood Memorial, Alpha was the horse that I liked out of that race. I mean, Alpha was clobbered on the first turn, made a big run at Gemologist in the stretch, and while Gemologist kind of almost handily turned back Alpha late to win by a neck, Alpha had been off 2 months going into that race purposely. They wanted a fresh horse for the Kentucky Derby. I thought it was an ideal prep. I thought he would move forward big time off of that race, but he missed 4 or 5 days worth of training because of an infection. He got a couple of minor superficial cuts of the Wood Memorial that really shouldn't have been anything to worry about, but one of them got affected, and he missed some time and had to be treated. And like I said, when that happens to a horse coming into the Derby, it's very unsettling. And you know, be warned, I got off Alpha, and so he'll probably run well. But, until he missed that training time, I thought he was a dangerous horse.
Yeah, just real quick, you know, Mike talked about earlier why it's so tough to pick a Derby winner. And I think part of it for me is, you know, you start looking for the Derby winner, you know, theoretically after this race is run, you start looking. But really in earnest, the Breeders' Cup and then the prep races start. And you just get so attached and hooked on horses more than any other race. And you try to see it with, you know, a handicapper's eye and just take this race separately. But like Mike said, I appreciate the discipline. You know, you like the Alpha. A lot of people would get tied on, and that would be their horse after the Wood Memorial, and they wouldn't get off him for any reason. That's something I try to incorporate in my handicapping, too. Just, you know, it's the Derby. The wagering opportunities are unlike any other race. but there's still lessons that we impart in all our handicapping every day that should still apply. So
yeah, we'll see how smart I am. We'll see how smart I am tomorrow night. We'll see.
You're listening to a special edition of State of the News on WFPL. We're live from Churchill Downs on Kentucky Oaks Day, talking with Mike Watchmaker from the Daily Racing Forum and Ed DeRosa from Brisnet.com. Another of the hazards of having a 20-horse field is the host of the show skips over one as we're going through him, and I forgot about a good horse here. This is the fourth favorite, Delahan. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I pointed it out to you because he's who I picked in the race.
I was wondering who that was going to be.
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, I think Delahan, however you say it, is going to be higher than the 8-1 that he was in the morning line. I thought that was a silly morning line. And the reason why I think he's going to be higher than that is there is a valid, legitimate question over whether this horse is as effective on dirt as he's been on Keeneland's Folly Track. It is true that his two career wins, the Bluegrass 3 weeks ago and the Breeders' Futurity last fall, both came on Keeneland's Folly Track with good pace setups. But he's going to get a good pace set up in this race. I love the way he's coming into this race. I mean, he was much the best when beating a length when second in his first start this year on turf down at Gulfstream Park. He had a little bit of a splint problem after that race, got over it, turned in by far the best race of his career when he won the Bluegrass. He inhaled Hansen quite handily in the late stages of the race. And this is a horse that looks like he's primed for an even bigger move forward this time around, and the pace setup is favorable to him. Now, it could very well be that Keeneland's Folly Track is Doolahan's surface of preference. But that doesn't mean he also can't run a good race on dirt. He was fourth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile here last fall, and I've looked at that race a few times, and he handled dirt perfectly well in that race. And he's a better horse now than he was when he ran in that race. I like Doolahan.
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, well, there's no question. You know, you say, oh, can he handle dirt? You know, on one hand, is he as good on dirt as synthetic? Probably not. But if you watch that Breeders' Cup Juvenile, as Mike said he has, he was clearly running. It's not like he didn't like dirt. He was just way out of it. He closed well. He passed horses at the end. The one thing I would say that's more concerning to me than the dirt question is how deep is he going to have to close? A lot of people think, oh, 1.25 miles, the long stretch of Churchill would favor a horse with his style. And actually, if you look through the charts, even closers like Mind That Bird, Giacomo, they're in the hunt at the eighth pole. If not in the lead, they're within a length of the lead. Can he get to that close to the lead by the eighth pole? I'm not so sure. Now, if a horse like Hansen's on the lead and is completely stopping, he might be able to run him down. But if it's a horse like Union Rags who runs his race, he's not going to back up to Doolahan quite as much. So the dirt question, it's valid only because he hasn't run on dirt. But I'm much more concerned about how far back he's going to be when they turn for home than I am whether he's going to be able to run his race down the lane.
Fair point. And here's the interesting thing, and this is why another reason why I like Doolahan's race in the Bluegrass quite a bit. This horse was completely outrun in the early stages of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year. But in the Bluegrass, when Hansen went out and set a very strong pace, Doolahan was never that far out of it. I mean, he was never much more than 6 or 7 lengths away from the early lead. I mean, to me, he showed much improved position or early speed in that race. And that's another reason why I think he's set for a big step forward, because that sort of subtle alteration of his running style says to me that he's on his toes.
And it's not quite Calvin Burrell, but one thing, you know, you don't hear about it nearly as much. It's Kent DeSormo's won 3 of these two, three in the last 14 years, and no other jockey in the race has won more than one. Some haven't even ridden in the race before. So when it comes to having to navigate, Kent DeSormo knows how to get it done.
A couple of more, we get into the more longer shots, 20-1. Went the day well and El Padrino. Any chance for these two, Mike?
Well, of the two, I would prefer El Padrino. El Padrino did show promise early in the year when he turned in a huge allowance victory at Gulfstream Park, beating Take Charge Into You, who came back to win the Florida Derby. And then El Padrino prevailed in the Risen Star Stakes, but the form of that race is not held up. It was a pretty soft race in retrospect. And then last time out, he was fourth in the Florida Derby. The setup was all wrong for him in the Florida Derby. I mean, he was he was being ridden as much to keep Union Rags in a box as he was to actually try and win the race. And he was reserved off a very moderate early pace. And I really thought he had little chance to win that race. But he has his work cut out for him. I also think maybe his form is heading the wrong way. As for Went the Day Well, you know, if this race was in a vacuum, and we didn't know Animal Kingdom won this race last year, I would say Went the Day Well had absolutely zero chance to win this race. But because it's the same owner, trainer, jockey combination that of Animal Kingdom, and it's the same last Derby prep in the Spiral, people are giving this horse, I think, more of a chance to win this race than he really deserves.
Yeah, I think, you know, last year when Animal Kingdom won, he was just a touch over 20-1. And even though he paid $43, I don't think that many people were that shocked. And I know a couple who actually, if not picked him on top, definitely thought he was a top contender. This group is so deep that when we're talking about these two horses that will be 20-1, I don't rate them anywhere near the chance I gave Animal Kingdom last year. Agree with Mike's point on the connections and Went the Day Well. That's certainly suppressing his price. And I agree with his point on El Padrino that I think he might be going in the wrong direction. So would either shock me? Absolutely not. I've said that about all the horses we've talked about so far. But we're definitely getting to the point now where we're talking horses that not only do I think are unlikely to win, but would surprise me and I'm not even going to use.
Okay. Well, we have three at 30-1. Daddy Long Legs is on the rail. Perspective and Saber Cat. How do these strike you?
I don't see any redeeming features in any of them. Daddy Longlegs was beaten a mile when he ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile here last fall. His only a career attempt on dirt. And even if he's capable of running better than that, I don't think he's still good enough. Perspective, he's a horse that's been talked about a lot. He's another horse that seems to be training very well, but his past performances, he's nowhere near good enough to win this race. And who was the third horse that you
Saber
mentioned?
Saber Cat.
Well, you know, here's a horse who's able to run in this race only because he won a race in Benton, Louisiana last November called the Delta Downs Jackpot, which is a slots inflated purse. That's the only reason why he's in this race. I mean, and he beat no one in that race. And the fact of the matter is, he actually took a big step forward when third in the Arkansas Derby last time out. It still was beaten almost 10 lengths. I don't like him at all.
Yeah, Daddy Long Legs. I mean, even if you thought he had any chance, he lost it when he drew the rail. I mean, not that it's not an absolute death penalty, but I didn't like him to begin with, and it's not like you say, well, the post helps. So I agree with Mike. It's tough to like him. I'd say 50-1 is probably more likely. Same with Perspective. I just don't see how he fits with this group. It's a good group. Yeah, he won the Tampa Bay Derby, but empirically, he's just not fast enough. Of the three, Saber Cat is the one I would say if you're a trifecta player. Maybe he's one running late at a price. If others get into trouble and don't get to run their race and he runs his, he needs to improve again from the Arkansas Derby. Another step forward may get him on the board. It's tough to see him winning, though.
Okay, we have six horses left, all at 50-1. A couple of notables here. Optimizer, trained by Dean Wayne Lucas, last-minute entry. And we have another Baffert entry, Liaison. Any chances for these?
Not for those two in my book. I think Optimizer's a vanity entry.
Yeah, absolutely. Of the 50-1, I actually like the one you didn't mention, Rousing Sermon.
Yeah.
He'll be another one. He'll be closing late. Certainly by no means a likely winner. But of the horses that would completely light up the tote board and pay more than $75 to win, he is definitely the one I like the most. He was actually decently fast at two. He hasn't replicated that at three. It's a similar knock on Union Rag, so you'd say, well, why would you like Rousing Sermon? Well, 50-1 is why I would like Rousing Sermon. I'll take a shot at that price that he's going to run back to two, to his two-year-old form. You know, like I said, he's the one I like the most at 50-1. By no means am I saying, oh, likely winner. But if you're the type of bettor, once a year you like to bet the show and maybe want to win a little more than 680, Rousing Sermon might be one to gamble on.
Well, I'm agreeing with Ed here, and I actually commented in the racing form. This horse's form might have been artificially darkened by the fact that he raced in San Anita over the winter. And his deep closing style just really doesn't play well at that racetrack. And he got away from Santa Anita, ran in the Louisiana Derby, and he was much more competitive. He finished third, beating only two lengths. Now, Louisiana Derby was not a good race this year. It was slow. The winner of the race isn't here. He wasn't even nominated in the Triple Crown Hero Border. He was like 109-1 in that race. It was not a great race, but at least Rousing Sermon was more competitive when he got away from Santa Anita, and he's the kind of horse that you want if you're betting trifectas to, like, fill out your third spot. You know, he's the kind of bust out you're looking for in those kind of wagers.
We need to take a break, and we'll be back with more from Churchill Downs in just a moment. This is State of the News on WFPL. Welcome back to a special edition of State of the News. I'm Rick Howlett. We're live from Churchill Downs with Mike Watchmaker from the Daily Racing Forum and Ed DeRosa from Brisnet.com. We've been looking at Kentucky Derby horses. Ed has picked Hanson, correct me if I'm wrong, to win the Derby, and Doolahan for Mike this year. Before we run out of time, we want to talk about the Kentucky Oaks, the race for fillies, coming up later this afternoon. 15 fillies entered in the race. Mike, who do you like?
Well, first let me say this is a very good race. I mean, the only three-year-old filly in training who's not here, who I wish would be here, is Mama Kimbo, who won the Fantasy, and she's just passing it, waiting for the Black Eyed Susan a couple of weeks from now at Pimlico. But otherwise, every good three-year-old filly in training who's supposed to be here is here. I think the pace is going to be very fast. I want horses from off the pace. I like Summer Applause in this race. The morning line of 15-1 is absolutely ludicrous. It's insane. If I get half that price, I'll be happy. But she likes to finish, and I also think the two favorites, Grace Hall and On Fire Baby, are dangerous too, but I prefer Summer Applause.
Yeah, I hate to pile on the morning line. We've mentioned it a few times today, but there's no way you're getting 15-1 if Mike and I both like the same horse. And only do we do, but Frank Angst, a former colleague of mine at Thoroughbred Times, like Summer Applause. Michael Blowen from Old Friends. The bus driver, I think, on the way over here likes him. The person who checked me into the hotel, I guess she's the wise guy horse for the Oaks. But hopefully, like you said, get 6 or 7-1. This race is loaded with speed, a lot of pace. She's going to come from off it. I love the jockey change from Robbie Alvarado to Garrett Gomez. I think he's going to have her in perfect position. Hopefully whomever's on the lead turning for home backs up, because she's the one I think is most inclined to like the mile and an eighth and get it done at the end. So I'm with Mike on this one. Summer Applause.
Speaking of Robbie Alvarado, he ran and had some trouble with the law overnight as we speak, and will not be eligible to run in the Oaks. Before we run out of time, just have a few minutes left here. Let's talk about Lasix a little bit. There was a big article in the Courier-Journal about it this morning. Lasix allowed is an anti-bleeding medication allowed on race days, but is banned in other countries. It's allowed here in the U.S. and perhaps some states ban. What do you think? Should it be banned on race days?
Well, it's awfully hard now to put the genie back in the bottle. I mean, I remember vividly New York was the last major racing circuit to finally break down and to allow race day medication, specifically Lasix, in the early 1990s. And we were promised that we would get all kinds of shippers and field sizes would increase just incredibly and everything would be wonderful. And exactly the opposite happened. But how are you going to put this genie back in the bottle now? I mean, unless you're willing to just have racetracks run 2 days a week, it's going to be awfully tough to do.
Yeah, I'm always hesitant with the comparisons to racing in other parts of the world because it's completely different from the way they train, from the way they run their meets, to even how they bet on the racing in other parts of the world. It's not a fair comparison the way we do things here. I would much rather see the focus be on testing drugs that should not be in a horse's system. We can have the Lasix debate down the road, but for me, the priority should absolutely be top-notch testing and security for drugs that should not be in a horse's system on race day, that are banned, that are performance-enhancing only. Let's start by getting those out of the game and then move forward with other topics. But for me, that's where my focus would be.
Before we run out of time, I want to talk about placing a bet. Let's talk about the Derby, Mike. What's the best... Wait, do you bet them across the board? Do you bet one to win, one to show? What?
Well, it depends on who I'm talking to. I mean, if I'm talking to an audience of neophytes, I would say pick your own horse because it's much more rewarding if that horse wins. Instead of listening to me or Ed or anybody else, go ahead and pick your own horse. Win or lose on your own opinion. In terms of betting, I haven't made a win bet. And I don't know how long, but probably much to my loss. And place and show wagers just aren't even in my vocabulary. I'm too much of a wise guy for that. I have to bet multi-race exotic wagers. But, you know, just have fun with it. Bet as much as you can comfortably.
Exactly. Yeah. no more than you can afford. What do you think? I got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, there's a big hatred toward the favorite sometimes. And granted, I don't like Bodemeister this year, but even if you like the favorite, the Superfecto, when Big Brown won at 9-5, paid 28 grand for a buck. So if you like the variance and say, hey, I want to go for the home run, go with the Superfecta. And as Mike said, go with your own picks. It makes it much more rewarding. You may not always win, but when you do, especially on Derby Day, it pays off.
Ed DeRosa, Mike Watchmaker, thanks so much for joining us here at Churchill Downs, and good racing luck to you.
You thanks too. So much.
That's all the time we have for today's program. A reminder that starting next week, this program will have a new name and format. It's called Byline. We'll be talking still to journalists, as we have, about the stories they cover, but we'll also going to be making some time for other voices to comment on those stories, and we'll have much more. We want to hear your voice as well. Byline debuts next Friday at 1 on WFPL. We'll also have some new music, by the way. State of the News is produced by the WFPL News staff. Our production team, led by Laura Ellis and Brad Yost, and special thanks to Joe Durso. I'm Rick Howlett. Good racing luck to everyone. Have a great weekend.